thank you so much for continuing to tune into our podcast every week. As you know, sometimes we invite special guests to join us and talk about travel with us. This past week, we were so excited to talk to Peter, a pilot for our major airline, that we ended up talking for a full hour. So instead of pushing that whole episode on you in one chunk, we decided to break it into part one and part two. So without further ado, I now present part two of episode 136. Enjoy!
Hello, and welcome to episode 136 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. My name is Laura, and tonight I'm joined by fellow Outlander agents Sandy and Elizabeth, and our special guest, Peter Rogers. Peter is a pilot with a major airline where he currently flies to Beijing, Tokyo, Shanghai, London, Barcelona, and Paris. He's also flown for the Navy and several domestic routes. We asked him to join us today because we thought that you, like several of us, have found yourself during airline travel wondering, how come they do that? Lucky for us and lucky for you, we get to have those questions answered by an industry expert, or as the saying goes, straight from the pilot's mouth. So let's get started. So what do you wish that passengers understood about pilots that might make their journey more pleasant?
Well, for starters, I would hope that they would all understand that we have absolutely zero interest in making them late and getting to their destination. Because just as an example, if you've got a 14-hour layover in Seattle, like one of my favorite cities in the world, and you have a four-hour delay, great, now I have enough time to get to Seattle and go to bed and get up and come home.
So it's pretty much ruined your day, too.
Ruined my day, too. So we're not interested in delaying our passengers. We're interested in getting them, we would like to be on time every single time. Because we don't like delays, we don't like cancellations. It makes our life just as miserable.
What's the worst kind of weather? I would imagine like snow and ice would be horrific, but then winds and stuff can be bad too.
Yeah, not having flown a plane before, I bet it's different than we think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, thunderstorms.
Yeah.
Thunderstorms are the most dangerous weather out there. High winds, if the winds get to the point where they are, where we can't land at a specific airport because the wind is too much of a crosswind, or there's some huge windstorm coming through, there are legal limits on what we can operate the plane at. And if those legal limits are exceeded, you just don't land. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, a really bad blizzard, you might not be able to land either. So the big thing with thunderstorms is that they're very dangerous. And if a thunderstorm is anywhere around the airport, you really need to be very careful. Because, there have been numerous accidents associated with wind shear and microbursts. Mm-hmm. And wind shear and microbursts happen in thunderstorms. All the bad weather you can imagine come out of thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And so, we give them a very wide berth. We steer clear of them. And that's, some people are sometimes, why is this plane going so far out of the way? It's because standing right between us and our destination is a big thunderstorm, and so we may have to loop way north or way west to go around it to get to our destination, because you do not mess around with that kind of weather.
And I think that's, for passengers, that's sometimes the most annoying thing, because if you really don't have a good sense of weather, a thunderstorm seems like the most...
Well, and people always kind of, when they plan travel in the winter, they think, oh, I'll get snowed in. People don't think that in the summer. They don't consider that it's something like a thunderstorm could screw up. I mean, look what happened with Atlanta and all the storms at weekend or whatever weekend that was.
I think one of my longest delays was a thunderstorm in Detroit. But, I mean, it kept me about 8 hours over. But that was a mixture of the thunderstorm and then a pilot change where the pilots became illegal because of the time. So they had to change out the crew, right?
Yeah. That happened to me in Miami, and they left all the luggage on the tarmac. And it went inside. When I got back to Raleigh, everything was wet, soaking wet. My whole suitcase, everything in it. It must have been, like, right on top of the pile. It was all wet.
I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you'd think after happening once I would pack all my bags, like, plastic bags and all my stuff, but I don't. I that was such a weird thing. I was glad I was coming home and not going on my trip, but, yeah.
So say you've been on one of those trips, Peter, and there's been a thunderstorm, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, you're now... you get to the airport and a bunch of people are finding out their flights are canceled. What is the best thing that you can do to put yourself ahead of the game?
As a passenger.
As a passenger,
I would recommend as a passenger being proactive. One thing that you need to understand is those people that are working at the gates, our gate agents, they are sincerely interested in doing right by you and getting you to your destination, you know, but you have to, when you think about a whole bunch of cancellations and literally hundreds, if not thousands of people, that are all now having to be rebooked, as a passenger, if you can, you know, push off your travel for another day, if you can think of a different routing, for instance, going out of a neighboring city, and suggesting a routing to the rebooking agents, because they're going to try to get you there, but they really have their hands full and they're trying to do right by you. But if you can offer them a solution, to their problem, they are going to take a look at it, and if it's going to work for you and it's going to work for them, they're going to jump right on it, and you could very possibly find yourself getting home sooner by being proactive and just being creative as far as where you can fly out of, where you're willing to fly into. That is one of the biggest things you can do. Just be positive, be proactive. Because you've seen our fellow citizens out there stamping their feet like little children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, the squeaky wheel gets the grease sometimes, but, you've seen how people behave, and it can be kind of sad the way they just behave like little kids.
And Peter and I actually had the opportunity to talk about this because last year I was up in Rochester and Buffalo, Well, I was still living in North Carolina, and North Carolina got this bad ice storm, this really bad ice storm. It was like January of last year, and or maybe the year before. And so they had to remove all the flights from Charlotte, all the planes from Charlotte, because they didn't want them to get ice on their wings. And there were those like 3-hour waits for American. And he had scolded me a couple times before for not using him as a resource when I got in trouble with American. It's like, do you remember what I do? I am a pilot. But I said to them, I was in Syracuse, and I said, if you can fly me out of Rochester or Buffalo, those are both good airports. And they were able to, you know, get me out in about 18 hours later, not the 3 or 4 days other people were having to wait. So, you know, that kind of, and I said, if you need to, you know, fly me into Raleigh or fly me into Charlotte, I can have someone come get me. Well, they were able to fly me into Greensboro, but, you know, it was just, he said, that was the smartest thing you did was to, you know, you already came ready to help them solve their problem.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's always when I tell my clients, I'm like, if anything goes wrong, the first thing you need to remember is be nice. Just be nice, because it's just such a horrible situation where everybody there and everybody thinks that they have the biggest problem. Just be nice. And that will get you so far. so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're proactive like that and come to them with a solution, you know, you're providing them with the tools that they need to help you. because what they're looking at is that you're trying to get to Raleigh-Durham, and so they're just looking at Raleigh-Durham. They're looking at how are we going to get this person to there? What routing, you know, can we give them? And you go, you know, I don't really have to go there. I can go here, here, and here.
Greensboro, like, or yeah.
Oh, wow, you know, that's easy. Mm-hmm.
So if your flight is canceled or is late, what responsibility does the airline have for you at that point?
If your flight, it depends on what the cause for the cancellation is. If it's the airline's fault, you know, they're going to, they should be putting you up in a hotel room. The rules vary, but if it's your fault, they don't really, they will try to help you, but they, you know, but if you're the one who, oh, well, I thought my flight was today and it was yesterday, you know, they're going to roll their
eyes.
People
do that. Yeah.
You know, oh yeah. It happens. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. You know, and that brings up another subject, you know, poor planning, and, you know, now that I've got a couple travel agents in the room.
Bring it.
No, you know, one thing, when people are going on, you know, their vacation of a lifetime, you know, they're going on their 50th wedding anniversary cruise down in the Caribbean. And I've seen this happen so many times where people somehow think that they're going to connect in Miami and then they're going to arrive in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and 1 hour later, be on board a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they're, and then they're yelling and screaming at us when their plane is delayed by 30 minutes or an hour that we've ruined their vacation. And if you're going to go on, you know, a vacation that like that, especially for a cruise ship, certainly, mm-hmm. go a day early.
Thank you.
Be there. Enjoy life in Puerto Rico
this
for a day. Yeah. But, you know, don't take a chance on ruining your vacation.
Right.
Because, you know, that ship is, you know, just like if you arrive late at the airport and you see your plane taxiing away without you, that cruise ship, they're going to pull up the drawbridge and sail away without you.
Yeah.
The same thing has to do with layovers, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't schedule them too tight.
Yeah. I actually still marvel that some layovers are legal. You know, I look at 40 like minutes in Atlanta and I'm like, what? Who can do 40 minutes in Atlanta? Who can actually do that? But it's legal. So you do. You have to be very careful.
When I was, Lindsay and I, she's not on this podcast, but when we were connecting in Miami, I think we took two different trains in the airport. And it was like a 30-minute mm-hmm. airport.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I left her. I just left her. But then I ended up waiting on the train and she caught up. But
So I want to take a minute to ask you about all the negative press that the airlines have been getting with these, you know, videos of people being beat up on planes and things like that. What's going on? What is it that we're not seeing, or what is it that we're seeing? What's changed? Why are we suddenly seeing this? It's not like social media is a new thing. So why has it just happened in the last few months that we're just seeing a rash of this?
You know, social media is not a new thing, but nowadays everyone has a video, you know, a video phone. Everyone has their iPhone or whatever that they can take videos, and everyone now, the first thing they do is grab their phone and start recording the moment anything starts happening. There's a part of me that wonders whether the public in general is just in a state of anger, and just more irritable than ever before. But there have been, over the last 15 years, and I've been flying commercially for 18 years, during those 18 years, there certainly have been incidents of people getting combative with gate agents, flight attendants, pilots. And one of the things that happened was they really clamped down, certainly after 9/11, you know, when people finally weren't going to just sit there and, you know, let something happen around them. But also, there had been enough incidents with flight attendants being accosted by passengers that they finally started not only enacting but enforcing laws where if you are a disruptive passenger, you're just going to be turned over to the police. And the flight attendants are, you know, just, they can't allow disruptive behavior. And certainly with the way that all airplanes are just jam-packed full every single day, it seems like it's so rare that you find a, you know, that unicorn of a flight that has an open seat between you and the person in the window. You know, so those empty seats are so hard to come by. So everybody is jam-packed in, and certainly the seats are not very generous in their size, as well as the space between you and the row right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And as they've done that to maximize profits, and some of this, sure, can be laid at the airline's footsteps, that, you know, they've decreased the seat pitch to the point where, well, Kevin is 6'4", and he doesn't even fit in a normal coach seat.
I'm 5'10", and my knees are touching, the next
seat. Right, exactly. My knees are touching the seat in front of me. I'm not jammed in, but I also don't have anywhere to move. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people being cooped up like that without anywhere that they can stretch their legs out, and you're, you know, not allowed to get up and walk up and down the aisles, you know, that I think it just puts people more on edge.
Well, and one of the first incidents we saw was about somebody being removed because they needed that seat for a flight crew member. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. The incident, you know, it was very, very poorly handled. I think we can all agree on that, that it was handled very poorly by the airline company. It was handled very poorly by the police. You know, for it to get to that point, there were just so many mistakes made. Our company, just like every other airline out there, we need to deadhead crews around the system all the time. It's going on constantly, because if a crew is going to go illegal down in, we'll say, Nashville, I think that's where that flight was going.
If a crew is going to go illegal
at a destination, they need to get another crew down there to continue that plane, because down there at that, where there's a crew going illegal, they have, you know, 50, 100, 200 people that are waiting to get on that plane and take it someplace else.
And by the crew going illegal, tell them what you mean by that, so they don't think it's somebody without a visa.
Or drinking or whatever,
No, it's what it comes down to is we're only allowed to be on duty for a maximum number of hours per day, and that's described by the FAA. You can only be on duty for it varies depending on how many crew members there are. So for four crew members, it can be anywhere like 18-20 hours. But if it's a pilot and a co-pilot on a normal domestic routing, if it's during daylight, they can do, I believe it's 14 hours, 14 extendable to 15 or 16. And at nighttime, flying like a red eye, it goes down to 12 hours from the day you start, time you start your work day to the time that you legally have to be off the job.
And when is starting your work day? Is that walking into the cockpit, or is that walking into the airport, or what's the...
No, that's your for your sign-in for your work day, and that's typically 1 hour prior to your flight's departure.
Okay.
And the thing is, it is illegal for me to take off knowing that I cannot get to my destination before my work day runs out. And I can be fined or lose my license for that, because it's considered a risk to public safety.
So if you're going to go, a crew going illegal, now you've got to get crew to them. And what the airline is saying is, yes, we may have to pull three passengers off, but we're sorry it's you three, but we've got 200 other people who will be inconvenienced if we don't get there. And so
right. That's exactly it. And like I said, it was handled very poorly. They should have never let themselves get in the position of having everyone on board the flight and then coming on board and saying, hey, we're selecting you, you, and you. Get off this airplane.
Yeah.
Because that's just setting up a really bad situation.
Yeah.
Typically, what we do is our deadhead passengers are ticketed because a deadheading passenger is what's called positive space. Okay, so they're not a standby passenger. They're not somebody who's just an employee of the airline trying to get someplace. They are a required person on board that airplane when it leaves the gate. And so at my company, we load our deadheading crew members. They're at least ticketed beforehand and typically loaded on the airplane before the passengers get on.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, to kind of, as we're winding down here, to end on a positive note, you said that, you know, that where you're flying now is Beijing. What advice would you give to passengers who are going to be on a flight that is 13 hours long? Kind of some survival tips, some good things to know, some things not to do that you've seen people do that kind of gets them in trouble.
Other than book business or first class, because we know that that's really the better thing to do.
Yeah,
but sometimes it's not possible.
You can snag a first class seat, you're going to be loving life. Because you'll sleep when you want to, you'll eat whenever you want to, you'll drink whatever you want. No. Actually, the things I'd recommend, if you're going on a long flight like that, stay hydrated. Mm-hmm. Okay? And staying hydrated means drinking water, not beer and wine. You know, we've actually had to stop and pull a plane over in Canada to unload people who had overserved themselves.
Wow.
And they were met by the authorities and taken off the airplane.
How far into the flight is that? That isn't terribly far, all things considered, when you're going to...
Well, it was in Newfoundland, Canada, and we let them off at the Atlantic coast into the hands of the awaiting authorities because they were absolutely hammered and disruptive.
Wow.
And started a fight on board.
Oh, gosh.
That's the worst. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was ugly. But, really, for a long flight like that, you want to make sure that you stay hydrated. I would highly recommend for anyone who's going to do long flights like that, get a pair of compression socks. Mm-hmm. Because when you're sitting like that for a long period of time, you know, the blood, it's very easy for the blood to pool down in your legs. And it's not only not healthy for you, but, you know, it's your legs are going to feel better. You're not going to have that swelling in your ankles. And get up occasionally and, you know, take a walk up and down the aisle. The flight attendants are going to get upset if you just spend 12 hours walking back and forth in the aisle. But, you know, they don't have any problem with you getting up and, you know, walking to the bathroom, coming back, you know, maybe doing a couple light stretches. And you can also do that while you're sitting in your seat, too. But, you know, some people swear by taking things like Ambien. I would not recommend that unless you know how it affects you before you try it. Don't go hopping on an airplane, throwing back, you know, a couple glasses of wine and throwing an Ambien. I've heard of really bad results.
Get on the internet and do some shopping.
Considering Ambien has a reputation without a couple of glasses of wine when you're in your own home, I can't imagine what happens on planes. Yeah.
Well, we all saw bride planes, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, there are plenty of stories. And, yeah, just go on the internet and Google it. You'll see that. Yeah, so, you know, if you're going to use something like that as a sleep aid, make sure that you've tried it out at home before so you know what its effects are, and you know how much is the, you know, the proper amount for you.
I've heard that about giving kids Benadryl.
Yes.
Because some kids have the, they don't fall asleep.
Yes. They get hyper.
Yeah, people giving their kids Benadryl, and they're like, oh, bad maneuver. They've got a hyper kid on their hands the whole way. Where, you know, but...
not that we condone that. Is, you know,
don't, for a long flight, don't drink a lot, because that... You know, because that just dehydrates you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that just makes the fact that you're on an airplane with very dry air, it just dehydrates you faster. And then try to get some sleep and, you know, make sure that you're sleeping whenever you feel tired. Because you're going to arrive in your destination and it's going to be 12 hours exactly. You know, if you're going to the Far East, it's 12 hours the opposite of your normal time zone. Mm-hmm. And so you're gonna be jet lagged when you get there. And for flights over to Europe, when you need to realize, oh, you know, I'm going to watch a movie, maybe watch two movies. Well, that flight over to London is only about 7 hours long. Seven, maybe eight, depending on if you're coming from someplace a little further. And so you're arriving over in London at about 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, for your body clock. And so if you stay up all night, well, now it's daytime over there and you're going to be up all day too. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to be just really, really fried.
Absolutely.
No fun being really fried, huh? How about the question of when they ask you to put your cell phones on airplane mode or to turn mm-hmm. them off.
Tell us it's a lie. We know it's a lie.
It's actually not a lie. What it really has to do with is it has not been tested.
Interesting.
Okay. And what you have to remember is the FAA, their charter is safe aviation. Okay, not aviation at all costs.
no matter what.
So what that comes down to is until they have done the studies and spent the money to determine that a cell phone and the radio signals that they emit are not going to cause a problem with navigational equipment, then you can't use them. So they exclude them and you have to be in airplane mode. Because it has not been tested.
That reminds me of when I was pregnant and I asked my OBGYN if I could have some drinks. And that's exactly what he said, though. He's like, well, we don't really have a lot of good tests because nobody wants to be the case study for how much drinking would actually mess up your kid. And I'm like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Not that I was really drinking whenever. I was
pregnant. But on a different note, they are making progress on that. And as you know, they have on a lot of airplanes nowadays, they do have Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So you can go into airplane mode. And when once the plane is airborne and they turn on the Wi-Fi, you still have the connectivity you want and can do your business work or entertain yourself, as the case may be. And we recently, there's what's called a Category 3 approach, which is a very low visibility, high precision approach. And it used to be that we had to request everyone to not only be in airplane mode, but to completely turn off their cell phones. And that was just recently rescinded because they have determined that they've done the studies and determined that at least on the 787 and the 777, that your cell phone does not affect the navigation equipment and has not put the plane in jeopardy on a high precision approach. So there is progress being made. So we're not really lying to you.
So at the time that we're recording this podcast, they've come out and said they're not going to ban laptops. But do you think that that actually might still be a possibility on long flights?
Boy, that is a really good question, because obviously the safety of everyone on board is a whether the laptops belong in the belly of the airplane or whether they should be on board the airplane at all. Obviously, people don't want to just ditch their laptops and leave them at home or all of that.
Nor do I really want to put it in my checked bag, because let's be honest, I've seen what happens to checked bags.
Well, I'm pretty sure I accidentally gate-checked it.
I totally understand. Yeah. One of the risks, though, is having all those lithium batteries in the belly of an airplane.
Right.
Because there have been numerous incidents of laptop batteries shorting out and catching on fire. And they're definitely a, fire hazard. And our cargo compartments do have fire suppression equipment. But it's really hard to say whether in the cabin or in the belly is the best place for those to be. And I think they've also realized that it's going to be too onerous a restriction to have everyone's laptops in the belly of the airplane. I don't think people would necessarily stop flying, but they also, I honestly believe, need to come up with better systems at detecting, if the issue is an explosive device, that they need to come up with a better method of detecting and testing. And maybe the solution is having everyone who wants to bring a laptop in goes in that security line, and it's going to take you an extra 15 minutes because we have to test each one. Wow. And while that people might not like that, we have to live in the world that we live in.
Right. Well, and if they know that you can't really tell or you can't enforce it, then people are going to say, well, this rule doesn't apply to me. I mean, we all know that that's going to happen. Right. Well, yeah. It's just my laptop, so it'll be okay. Yeah.
But I mean, just the logistics of it, because so many people that take those long flights are business.
Right.
It's a nightmare. Mm-hmm.
Well, and even those of us who aren't necessarily traveling specific for business, but if we run our own business, we can't be.
Well, and if you're on an 8-hour mm-hmm. flight, you're going to expect to do some work. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we thank you for coming. That is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com. Then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Elizabeth, Sandy, our special guest Peter, and myself Laura, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah.